Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. This is Wayback Playback, episode number 320, as this week we bring you the second hour of NWA Halloween Havoc 1989. Hello, you people. I am Pat McNeil. Normally, I am joined on this program by the other half of the podcasting tag team champions of time and space, Jim Valley. Jim is recovering from a non-COVID autoimmune system issue. He is out of the ICU, out of isolation, and able to eat solid foods, so we hope to get him back with us in a few weeks. In the meantime, please welcome our colleague from the Creative Control Network, John Paz of the Taskmaster Talks programs and almost a dozen other great podcasts. John, are you ready to hop into the Wayback Machine, go back to 1989, and meet the two-man power trip that is Johnny Ace and Shane Douglas?
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me be a part of your show. Really appreciate it. And definitely looking forward to seeing some dynamic dudes. That is for sure.
Absolutely. And also joining us, as has been the case over these last several months, our sponsor, Mr. Ken Banks of Ken and Tech's Pet Care of Bangor, Maine. Ken, are you ready for for tonight's show?
Pat, let me tell you, I like my peanut butter chunky, and I like my dudes dynamic.
Well, who doesn't? Thank you very much, Ken. All right, yeah. Some small business. Obviously, we still have our Patreon going at patreon.com/waybackplayback. And still doing pretty much the same thing, making sure that you get, if you sign up, you're going to get our shows early, you're going to get them commercial free, and you're going to get all of them, including the ones that were behind the paywall just a couple of years ago. So that's 320 episodes in total. So go ahead and check that out, patreon.com/waybackplayback. We did well on the charts this week. We were back on the Apple Podcast charts in Great Britain for the first time in over a month, so I think we can thank Frank Petiani for that. Also, we are back in one of the top 1,500 podcasts in Brazil, which, since we don't do the show in Portuguese, is pretty impressive. We had a good week overall. Thank you, listeners, wherever you are, for making Wayback Playback part of your weekly routine. And a happy Hell in a Cell Day, everybody, as this show airs. All right, now, this is the part where we go over what's happening in the world on the date, which is October 28th, 1989. Let's see, New York Times bestsellers on that date, Clear and Present Danger by Tom Clancy, and All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten by Robert Fulghum. John, you can tackle either one of those fine books.
I've seen Clear and Present Danger, the movie, but I never actually read the book, I got to be honest.
Okay, well, the movie had Harrison Ford, so I think...
Yes, yep, good movie, go. Yep.
Yep, that's really all the people need to know, I think. All right, and... did I keep that? Yes, I did. Okay. Ken, you're still there? What did you think of everything?
I believe I'm contractually obligated to... play Jim Valley's role here and yes. Say that everything I needed to know I learned in kindergarten was a very popular launching off point for people to do graduation speeches and things along those lines.
People were constantly
quoting that book back then, just incessantly.
Okay. I didn't even ask John how old he was or is.
38.
38. Okay. Well, hey, you were alive when the show aired, so that's good.
Yes.
The number one song on the Billboard charts on this day, "Miss You Much" by Janet Jackson, in its fourth week at number one. Ken, as the older person, you may comment on that.
1989, in many ways for me, was like the peak of pop music. You had Janet Jackson, you had Bobby Brown in his prime, you had Milli Vanilli, Jody Watley, like Paula Abdul. It was aces in 1989, man.
Okay. Well, John was what, seven? Probably
seven. Yep.
Yep. So you knew a little bit about pop music.
Yeah, a little bit. You're getting there, I guess, when you're seven. You're starting to realize what's out there. Probably not appreciating it as much, but you're starting to feel what's going on out there.
Okay, the top movie in the country, Look Who's Talking, starring John Travolta and Kirstie Alley. And what a week Kirstie Alley's had. John, do you remember that movie?
I do. I remember it very well. Look Who's Talking, too, a few years later.
Yeah, Bruce Willis was also in that movie.
Played the baby. Yep.
All right. In the news, top news story, 20 people killed when a commuter plane crashes in Hawaii. Well, that's not very fun. College football. Ohio State and Minnesota played in Minneapolis at the Metrodome. The game was called the Miracle at the Metrodome if you're an Ohio State fan, because Minnesota was ahead 31-0 at the half. And with under a minute to go, Greg Fry, not Glenn Fry, hits a 51-yard touchdown pass to Jeff Graham for the win. Ohio State wins 41-37. That sounds pretty crazy, John.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. I remember the highlights of that game and just being absolutely shocked. And you could still see it on ESPN Classic and stuff. That is a legendary game for sure.
Yes, Ken, you're still not...
I really don't have a whole lot of opinions about that. I wasn't watching football back then.
Okay. And on Against Halloween Havoc, Game 4 of the 1989 World Series. The series had been delayed after that minor earthquake interrupted Game 3. But Oakland comes through in Game 4, gets the victory 9-6. Ricky Henderson leads off the game with a home run for the Athletics, and it just gets worse from there. Oakland sweeps the series 4-0. Dave Stewart of the Oakland Athletics is your most valuable player. Ken, World Series, earthquake?
I hated the Oakland Athletics back then because they used to kick the crap out of the Red Sox. So I was rooting against them.
Well, at least that's changed. John?
Has.
I done the opposite. I used to love the Oakland Athletics, the Bash Brothers, Ricky Henderson, like I said, Dave Stewart, Terry Steinbeck at catcher, Carney Langford. They had so many good players. It was just crazy, but they were definitely dominant. And, obviously they win the World Series, but they were definitely an odds on favorite for a few years after that as well. Although they never win the title again with that team.
No, they did not. They became the, Moneyball team later.
Yeah.
As many of you know, our Wayback Playback patron is up at patreon.com/waybackplayback. And since we have Frank Pettiani here with us, I thought I'd explain to Frank how our Patreon works, since he's going in with no prior knowledge. And if I can make that simple for him, then obviously the rest of you will figure it out. Right, Frank?
Absolutely. And anytime you can make something as simple as you can for me, I am all in for it. So I appreciate that, Pat.
Okay, no problem. Here's how it works. We have the podcast. The podcast is available for free. However, some of our listeners like things like being able to get the episode early. With Jim out, it's mostly been like 24 hours early. But, you get the episode early. You get the episodes ad-free, no commercials added onto them like you get on the free version. And, some people want every episode of the show, including the episodes that were locked behind the paywall at pwtorch.com. We made a deal to bring them out from the paywall. But deals like that cost money. So if you want all 318, actually after tonight, 319 episodes of Wayback Playback, and you want it ad-free, and you maybe want to listen to it a little early, for just $4.50 a month, you can subscribe. Patreon.com/waybackplayback. All very simple. That's if you'd like to support us some more and get some of the stuff that we add to it every week, like bonus shows that Jim and I have done in the past at other places, for example, or bonus episodes that I've been cooking up with Ken Banks, and the occasional bonus match we throw in for free. That is on the Black Scorpion tier. That will cost you $10 a month. You still get everything that was promised to you from the $4.50 a month. You just get stuff added onto it. And there's another tier if you'd like to advertise on the show. Please go ahead and do that. Reasonable rates are available. As a matter of fact, for as little as $150 a month, we will let you advertise on the show. It's quite a deal. So that's pretty much it, Frank. Do you have any questions?
Absolutely not, Pat. Really looking forward to doing this with you, and excited to be going back in time and digging into a little WCW. Haven't done it in a while, and I'm really looking forward to it.
All right, so that's the commercial. Patreon.com/waybackplayback. Sign up today. You'll thank us later. All right, so we're back here. We're at 54 minutes and 22 seconds into Halloween Havoc 89. Having completed the first three matches, and we are getting ready for the tag team title match. If everybody will go ahead after getting to that point, and we are going to hit play together at the same time in 3, 2, 1. All right, there we go. And, yep, there's Gary Michael Capetta, and Oh, my goodness. Yes, this is the World Tag Team title match, and look who's there. Jim Cornette with the Dynamic Dudes. I can report that the actual song that was playing, since they weren't doing their own themes yet, Wipe Out by the Beastie Boys and the Fat Boys was their entrance music. That's Shane Douglas and Johnny Ace.
Doesn't really fit them at all, especially with Cornette being the manager, which is still a weird sight for me to see. I know it's all part of the storyline that's going to happen with the dudes in the Midnight Express, but very weird seeing Cornette with those guys.
And John, I'm going to say, since you host Shane Douglas's podcast with him, and I've gotten to interview Shane Douglas a few times when I was back on the torch. Shane Douglas, not a big fan of John Laurinaitis in real life.
No, he is not, and he absolutely despised this team. And anytime you bring it up, it's almost like good-natured ribbing, where we'll bring up, hey, Dynamic Dudes. Although, I'll be honest, I know this match is going to be a good one, but he never has anything positive to say about the Dynamic Dudes.
Yeah, I don't think Jim Cornette was a big fan of doing this either. Ken?
I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that neither Shane nor Laurinaitis could actually ride a skateboard.
Oh, good guess.
Okay.
Definitely not on either one of them.
Now, believe it or not, this music for the Freebirds is an overdub, because what they were playing for them was, I believe, Freebird by Lynyrd Skynyrd, if I remember correctly. Or they were still doing... Well, actually, I don't know. But I know in 89 they were actually coming out to Lynyrd Skynyrd. But heck, they might have... They might have just given up on that when Garvin got in there.
Wow. Greatest rock and roll band of all time, you know.
Yeah.
Hall of Famers. Bad Street Atlanta GA is a great song. I love that song.
It's baddest street in the whole USA.
I've heard that the further down the road you go, the badder it gets. But that's true. That can be. All right.
There is Freebird Fantasia. Yes. Yep. And they're Hall of Famers. They're definitely big and hairy. I think that's something we can all agree on.
And to this day, still my mom's all-time favorite tag team.
This incarnation of the group?
Yes.
Wow.
Jimmy Jam and Michael PSAs are my mom's favorite tag team.
Okay. Yeah, as Jimmy Garvin likes to say. So you're never going to get a better chance, Ken, to talk about Ken and Tex Petcare during this hour than you will at the start of this match, so go.
This is absolute heresy, Pat. We should be paying this match the respect that it deserves. Ken and Tex Petcare of Bangor, Maine. We do dog walking. We do overnight pet sitting. I scoop cat boxes. I do everything that a man needs to do to make sure that your pets receive the best possible care in the greater Bangor area. Tonight, as we record this, my director of human resources, my dog, the lovely Miss Lady.
Hi, Lady.
She and I are on. Yay. Well, if she can't hear you, she's sound asleep, but I'll pass it on later. Okay. We are taking a little bit of a vacation in Vermont, and tomorrow we're going to take a road trip to Manhattan and let her pee in the Big Apple for the first time ever.
All right.
We have been working incredibly long hours the past several months. Maine has done a great job containing the COVID-19 virus. So people are still traveling. People are still working and busy. And Lady and I are working and busy, and we are enjoying our vacation. And we are enjoying seeing all our clients when we get back this week. Find us online, kenandtech.com, KENANDTEK. Find us on Facebook, same spelling. Find us on Instagram, Ken and Tech. Just find us.
And pictures from Ken and Lady's vacation are up on Facebook and Instagram in case you need them. All right, so Philadelphia, not exactly a hotbed of Dynamic Dude fans, as you might be noticing, John.
Yeah, that's the first thing when I went back and I watched this last week, because I just wanted to watch it again because I hadn't seen it in a while. So that was like the first thing I noticed. It was like, wow, the dudes get booed out of the building, typical Philly fans, and the Freebirds, you know, are over his babyface.
What was that?
I don't know. I think there were two different spots going on there at the same time.
Wow.
That might have been a cluster.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. Well, we did get a neck breaker out of that, and here comes Jimmy Jam. Yes.
There were two spots going on, and they blew both of them
at the same time. Yes. Well.
Yes.
Now, Jim Cornette used to complain about Jimmy Garvin during this era was that Jimmy Garvin was roided up and didn't want to sell for anybody, which. Which apparently he had a match and Steve Dr. Death Williams was on the other side and Doc didn't appreciate that. So yeah, go. If you're going to get a shoot interview, go back and get Jim Cornette's 1989 timeline from Kayfabe commentaries. You can hear pretty much all about this promotion at the time. All right. Okay, so they're trying to do double team moves. They're really trying to show tag team continuity.
That wasn't a bad one, though. I mean,
no, it wasn't bad. Yeah,
not terrible.
No, it wasn't.
Not great, but not terrible. What do you think about the tights?
The tights are. I like the tights better than I like the Poochie outfits they came out in. Right hand. Jim would have appreciated that. Anyway, here we go. Oh, yep. Shane Douglas could wrestle. Yep. Johnny Ace is. Well, Johnny Ace actually did get a main event run in WWE. It was 20 years after this. So,
hey, his run in All Japan Pro Wrestling. I mean, he showed some. Yeah. I know maybe some political reasons he kind of grew up the ladder there, but I think he had a pretty good run there. This, here it's not his best work as a dynamic dude, but he definitely got better in All Japan.
Yeah, this is not peak Laurinaitis though. Yeah, that's fair.
Okay. I gotta say it's really interesting for me to see Jim Cornette out there because I always thought that the first tag team that he ever managed was Bombastic Bob and Bodacious Bart. The Midnight Express.
That's one version of the Midnight Express, not the most popular one, by the way.
Oh, huh.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, there it is, the blind tag. Very nicely done.
Oh, missed it.
Yeah. All right. Well. Oh, wow. Yeah. That was something.
Hi.
Did you notice that he missed that last dropkick? Did you know on the
why he missed the dropkick? Because Jimmy Garvin decided, yeah, I'm not doing that.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, let's not give the dudes all the blame for that spot here.
Yeah, it looked like the timing was okay. It was just Jimmy Jam Garvin did not want to take a double dropkick and kind of sashayed out of the ring there.
Philadelphia definitely getting behind their tag team champions.
Who are the heels?
Yes, they're the heels. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Shane Douglas is laughing, so he obviously isn't bothered too much by that.
And it was great to see Jimmy Jam there doing his job by kind of bringing on the shears. Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, this is something. All right, here we go. Oh, here tag team time. We're going to get another here, the double team spot. Oh, okay.
Oh my.
Oh.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah, the fans didn't go for that.
They're not into these tag team maneuvers by the Dynamic Dudes. The Dynamic Dudes are really trying, though.
Yeah. I mean, they're not bad, but they're not the Fantastics. They're not Ricky and Robert. I mean, I appreciate why you want to make, you can't stay static forever. You have to make new teams, especially in this era of the NWA, which had a lot of tag team wrestling. There's that fan with the Dynamic Dudes number one sign.
You think that's a plant? Do you think that's a real sign from a real fan?
That guy just looks confused. Like, I don't know why they're cheering for the Freebirds. I don't get it. Yeah, okay. Yep. All right.
Now, Pat, what's the real story behind the name? Is it true that Jim Herd thought that those two names, the two most popular names in 1989, Dynamic and Dudes?
I guess so. Yeah, Jim Herd didn't like the Dynamic. He put together the gimmick, but he didn't like the Dynamic Dudes. Actually, the story Cornette says is that he didn't like Shane Douglas because Shane Douglas asked questions and didn't I guess treat Jim Herd with the proper deference, which is why the Dynamic Dudes and the Midnight Express were paired with each other and feuded with each other because because Jim Herd didn't like either team. So.
I believe it.
Yeah. Well, but yeah, the Freebirds won the tag team titles, I believe, against the they won the tournament beating the Midnight Express in the finals. So I guess this is forwarding the story. The dudes get the title shot here at the pay-per-view, and the Midnight Express are upset about that. And you saw the tension, if you were with us last week, you saw the tension between the Midnight Express and Jim Cornette. And that will be followed up on TV after this show. There we go. Up the roll-up. Ooh, not quite. Oh, there we go. The right hand of left hand of Michael Hayes.
Oh, that was a nice spot. That was a good spot.
Yeah, it was.
Great pop by the crowd. Yeah, that was nice.
Hey.
The exact pop that you didn't want, but yeah, it was it was a good one.
Right. Well, okay. Well, they're it's not like they're not selling for the Freebirds. Okay. Bob Cottle sounds a little confused too about the wrong team being cheered.
Bob Cottle confused.
I know, it's hard to believe. Yeah, well, Ken, if you want to take the Jim Valley spot of dragging Bob Cottle, that's fine. But a lot of people like Bob Cottle.
I love Bob Cottle.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's a wonderful man. I have no question. I'm just
right
saying sometimes he seemed a little. Occasionally, he could seem a little lost out there.
Yeah, well, and sometimes there were good reasons why an announcer might seem a little lost out there. But yeah, the dudes are taking the heat here.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Next to like Art Donovan, he was Gordon Solie, but. You know, just
I don't want to even imagine Bob Cottle and Art Donovan calling a match together. Bob, how much that guy weigh?
Oh, shoot.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say it. Shane Douglas's hair is magnificent out on the eighth series.
That's true.
Oh, my God.
I mean, nothing against Johnny Ace's mullet, because that's some serious hair going on there, but.
Yeah, but his mullet is
Shane's timeless. Better. Yeah, Shane's is better.
Shane's mullet is just fantastic.
And, I mean, and you got the Michael Hayes mullet and the Jimmy Garvin perm, which is just outstanding.
A lot of interesting hair choices here.
They're chanting for the DDT, which is Hayes' finisher.
And Shane still got a full head of hair.
Yeah, he does. That's impressive. I mean, it's 31 years later, and I'm losing my hair. So hey, more power to Shane Douglas. All right, there we go. Yeah,
mine's coming back, Pat.
That's right. Yes. Oh, there's the guy with the face paint. My gosh, that's outstanding.
Was that Bruce Mitchell?
No, it was not Bruce Mitchell.
Part of the country. Oh, okay.
I don't think Bruce made the trip to Philadelphia for this one.
All right. Well, you never know.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I mean, yeah. Okay. Oh, here we go. Oh, now Jimmy Garvin he should have been begging off.
Well, sort of.
Yeah. A lot of backdrops, though. Backdrops are not as big a deal in 2020 as they are now in 1989. Oh, he's a one-man dropkick machine here.
Shane Douglas had a gorgeous dropkick.
Yeah, he did.
He really did.
No fooling. I mean, people thought, the thought was Shane Douglas is going to be something, and in 89 and when he went to WWF in 1990, and well.
He should have been so much
more. Oh, Hayes with the trip right there, and Garvin with the three count.
Oh.
And listen to that roar.
What a pop, yeah. The crowd was loving that.
Yep.
Too bad they should have been booing.
Well. There are the fabulous Freebirds. Wow, that Deborah Harry doesn't look impressed though. In the front row. Okay.
I actually like that finish. Do you like that finish?
I did like that finish. That's one. I mean, that's one of those that it's you don't want to see it done on an indie show because they might botch it. But they did it well.
Cornette's pissed.
Yeah, it's like, guys, what are you doing out here? All right, let's see it again. Now this is Okay, there's Hayes. Hayes has to, there we go. Yeah, Hayes got it. Hayes made it look good. And Garvin turns him over, and you know, he's not hooking the tights or anything. I mean, it's you know, Garvin gets the three count. Must deal the better team won. All right, speaking of the better team, here they are, Rick and Scott. They have a 133% chance of winning this one, guys.
Scott Steiner math. You got to love that. Yep. Such a great promo.
Yep. All right, there's Chris Cruz. Yes. Chris is acting like he's getting instructions from the headset.
Yeah, who's in his ear right now?
Scott Steiner starts out by telling us we have no strategy. Yes. There's no rules, yeah. No anything. All right. He always had this. He always had this inside of him. Yeah. Yes. All right. So it's the Steiners against Doom. This is the big grudge match. You know, Robin Green, aka Woman, and Kevin Sullivan. You know, set up Rick Steiner, set up Scott Steiner, and put together this team of masked, muscular African American individuals, who. And even though that they appeared at the same time that the two big muscular African-American wrestlers on the roster had disappeared, nobody knew who they were, really.
Yeah, I don't know about that with putting Ron Simmons and Butch Reed under the mask. I don't know how good that did for them. I know talking to Ron Simmons, he was not really a fan of the mask gimmick.
No. Okay, so 89... before the Steiners get their music, they're coming out to Welcome to the Jungle by Guns N' Roses, if I remember correctly.
Yep. Awesome.
Yep. Great song. Yep, there they are.
Not surprisingly, the Steiners are very over in Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah. They are. Yep. I mean, finally getting them together as a tag team was a great idea. And they wanted to be a tag team so much that, both of them, in turn, passed over the opportunity to get pushed as singles wrestlers. But yeah, this is their peak. Okay, there she is, Nancy Sullivan, Woman, and they are coming out to "Her Strut" by Bob Seger. Yep, it was the '80s. Yeah, there they are. The masked. No, those aren't the two. Please tell Michael Saget those are not the two black scorpions. Those are Doom. There's Doom 1 and Doom 2. Nice dress, though.
What did you think about them coming out with the robes?
The robes I don't get. But I thought, they were more over when they just came out as Ron Simmons and Butch Reed.
It took a while, but
they hadn't treated Ron Simmons and Butch Reed as much more than mid-carders, but, you could see those guys as a team working better than they did as individuals. And, definitely the late Nancy Sullivan, definitely one of the more attractive women in wrestling during this time frame.
Absolute stunning woman.
Kevin Sullivan's on the booking committee now, right, in 89? I know Flair was, in charge of the committee, more or less, but
I think it was Flair, Cornette, Sullivan. Wasn't like that basically the crux of the...
Well, yeah. I mean, I know Cornette was on the committee during that time. Yeah. But, the problem is we still have it's the late 80s, but we still have the idea that, hey, if we put this white lady with these two African-American dudes, it's going to get such heat. And, that's not why it got heat. It got heat because women had these guys beat up Scott Steiner in like a field somewhere and she betrayed Rick Steiner. Oh, here we go.
Oh,
good Lord.
It is impossible. I mean, listen to the crowd that hated the baby faces now love the Steiner brothers.
Love it.
Yep.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, Pat, because 10 years later, the Brain Trust at WCW still thought that it would be automatic heat to have a white woman with two African-Americans.
Yes, they
when
did.
They had, when they had Sherry manage Harlem Heat. So
that's right.
Yeah.
Well, of course. Why wouldn't it be? Well, actually, that was sort of a last minute decision. There was an indie manager out of Florida they wanted to bring in to manage Harlem Heat, and then they just decided Chirag would be better, which I'm guessing they were right.
Oh, really? The guy, every time there were like talking on the phone, that was supposed to be
A guy named Johnny Attitude.
Oh no, okay.
Johnny Attitude, no relation to Johnny Fairplay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, Bob Caudle doesn't know who these fellows are, but they're extremely powerful men.
Yeah, but they just got dropped on their head pretty easily by the Steiner brothers, though.
Well, this is the Steiner brothers, though. It's hard to explain unless you were there just how cool the Steiner brothers were compared to, you know, at the time. And I mean, the Road Warriors were cool, and the Road Warriors will be on next week's program, but. I mean, you had the Steiner brothers, who are not only big and powerful, but they're, you know, Scott Steiner's doing the Frankensteiner, and they're doing double team moves that, you know, other teams just aren't doing.
And they were legit, too. They had a legitimacy about them that the other tag teams just didn't have, not even the Road Warriors.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they're real brothers, real collegiate wrestlers. Yeah.
Yep.
I love it, too. No matter how big the opponent is, even if the opponent doesn't want to go, they're going for the suplex. You know what I mean? They're going to toss him.
They were not shy about doing that to enhancement guys that they felt weren't prepared enough. Oh, you're not ready for this? Well, here you go anyway. Boom.
Yeah, if the Steiners wanted to suplex you, you were getting suplexed.
And Rick Steiner, my favorite clothesline, that Steiner line where he comes out of like a little bit of a stance,
right,
and he. Oh, man, yeah. He just obliterates them. Oh, man, let's talk about stiff.
Right. Okay, so, of course, Jim Ross is taking the advantage of this to plug the 1-900 Wrestling Hotline in their coverage of the show. It's
909-9900.
Yeah, 1-900.
That actually was that's a good number. That. It's easy to – you remember it to this day.
Yep.
I used to call it all the time.
Okay.
Well, I'm sure your parents were thrilled.
Oh, they're not happy when they're like, what are you doing on that 900 number for 20 minutes? What the hell?
You're too young for this. Whatever it is. Yeah. Okay. All right, there we go. Big chin lock. Oh, my goodness. All right.
Oh. I was always more of a Steiner Brothers guy than a Road Warriors guy, too, myself. I don't know. Even when I was younger, I always loved the Steiner Brothers. You're right. Something about them is cool. They're tough. You know, they don't take any from anybody. They're throwing you around the ring, no matter how big they are. I just always loved the Steiners.
I guess it depends on when you got into this, because if you're like mid-80s, you know, you saw the Road Warriors come together on TBS, you were into the Road Warriors. If you're in the late 80s and you saw the Steiner Brothers become a team, especially after Rick had been a pretty popular singles guy for a while, then you're into the Steiner Brothers. I think. But yeah, Ken did not get the Starrcade 89 did not win the vote this time for Ken, but if it had, you would have seen the Road Warriors and the Steiner Brothers as part of the Iron Team tournament. And I remember that being a draw.
That was a great, great match.
Yes, it was. There we go. Oh, geez.
Wow.
Yeah, you just can't imagine running into that.
They're innovative as hell, too, the Steiner Brothers. They'll come out with moves that, at this point, you've never seen before. And the guys of their size to be doing some of these athletic maneuvers is pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have guys in 2020 with size and strength and can do great moves. But this was the beginning of that. The idea in the 80s, especially with WWF style getting hot, is if you were big and powerful enough, you didn't have to, you didn't always have to do athletic moves. You just relied on your size and power. The Steiners didn't feel that way.
And I don't know if anybody saw that, but Doom just invented the Stone Cold Stunner.
I was going to say that. Did you guys notice that Ron Simmons just did a Stone Cold Stunner?
Yeah, it totally did.
Yep. Well, it wasn't, it wasn't a big deal back then. Yeah. I mean, the move did the three-quarter, three-quarter face lock and drop,
I always loved the way Rick Steiner sold the clothesline, too, that where he kind of spun around. Like, he really sold it well. That was a nice one there.
Right. And there's a two count.
Looked like he might have hurt his neck a little on that.
Well, you don't want... Oh, so something going on in the crowd. Okay.
All right, Bruce Mitchell causing a ruckus.
Yeah. Well, or whoever's in the crowd at that time. Well, it's Philly. It could be Joe Feeney.
You know what's interesting about that is Feeney should have been to more shows than he had been. I just talked to him. I was surprised he hasn't been to more shows.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know how young he was.
But did you notice? I don't know. I'm trying to remember when it was on the show, but Hat Guy, the infamous Hat Guy from ECW.
Yeah,
he's in the crowd doing the show. I don't know if you mentioned this before, he's wearing a UPS or no USPS hat.
Oh wow!
Yeah, he's actually.
So he's like doing a Cliff Clavin bit here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I just got a spinning circle here where the show should be. So keep describing what's happening while we get this, we hopefully get this situated sometime.
Okay, Scott Steiner really likes the Snapmare. Woman is still absolutely gorgeous. Rick Steiner's back is as wide as a barn door. Are you up to speed yet?
No. Okay, hold on. We're gonna get this back though. Okay, here we go.
Side headlock.
Yep.
Swings him in.
Oh no!
Cheap shot.
Heels being heels, man.
Yep. Cheap shot.
Yep. Well, you hate to see it. There we go. 20.
Are you back?
Not. Yeah. I'm getting there. I'm getting to. All right. Give me a timestamp here.
1:21:13.
Okay, so I'm not that far behind. I'll be up with you in a minute. Okay, there we go.
Double axe handle.
What? Okay, here we go. All right. Up. Oh, another double team move. Okay. Well. All right. Oh, now the crowd's upset. Oh shoot. Okay, here we go.
Oh. Dumped him on the guardrail.
All right. It is. Let's see.
1:21:45.
Okay. Scott Steiner. Yep. Okay. Yep. Oh, now I'm a little bit ahead. Yeah, but okay. We're about there.
Oh. Yeah.
Nice. I'll just
guardrail again.
Okay. Okay. 1:22. Maybe a little. Yep. Scott Steiner's being thrown back in my version. I can pause it if I need to.
You're like 1 second ahead of me, so I think it works.
Okay, that's good. All right, I just paused it for a second. Here we go. All right, Scott Steiner looking for the tag, and here comes Doom. Yep, they're taking their sweet time in there.
They certainly are.
Elbow. All right. Hey, get out of there. Yep.
What do you think about Nick Patrick as a referee? Are you a fan?
I mean, he's good. Yep. I mean, this probably isn't is this probably I don't know if this isn't peak Nick Patrick. He's only a few years removed from being a wrestler, but he was very good. Wasn't crazy about all the heel referee stuff with him, but yeah. I mean, they're going to do heel referee angles every so often.
You didn't like him in the NWO, I guess.
Referee X. I thought it was funny. Yeah. I mean, Nick Patrick's a fine referee. Of course, you knew that when WWF won the war that Nick Patrick as the senior WCW referee was going to get shafted a little bit.
Mm-hmm, of course.
Yeah. All right, there we go.
You know, the Steiner Bros, you know, for being big and stiff and tough, they do sell pretty well too, and they are selling a lot for Doom in this match.
Well, I mean, if you're fighting with Ron Simmons and Butch Reed, you know, you're probably going to want to sell for them. Yeah. I mean, I think that. I was told that the Steiners both had a lot of respect for Ron Simmons and they weren't and they do appreciate guys who can work and who can who can fight in a stiff manner, believable manner with them. So, yeah.
Yep, I'm sure you've heard this story before, but the Steiner brothers used to pick on everybody in the locker room. They used to beat up DDP, tape him up to a chair, beat up all the guys. Apparently, they used to beat up Butch Reed and kind of pick on him and stuff. Yeah. So they got to the point where they basically cleared out the locker room. They beat everybody up, like literally just the two of them. They got to Ron Simmons. They both look at each other. They both look at Ron Simmons, and they go, nah, and they walk away. And Ron goes, yeah. So Ron goes, I'm uneffable. I was like, what do you mean? He goes, nobody Fs with me. I'm uneffable.
Right.
So the Steiner brothers together didn't want to try him one on two either, which
yeah,
is
no,
great respect. Yeah.
I can't say I blame him. Yeah. Well, Ron Simmons is definitely a guy you don't want to mess with. Still to this day. Oh, here we go.
Oh. Oh, God. Ooh. Good spot.
Timber!
Good spot.
Yep. All right. Philadelphia was the sort of the Northeast hotbed for Northeast hotbed for WCW, and it's pretty much the same things appeal to these fans as appealed to the ECW fans years later. They like they like good wrestling, and they like they like to see a little violence in there.
There's no doubt about that. This crowd, I do love the they would boo certain guys, like the dynamic dudes, and really though, they should be booing them. You know what I mean? Like they're very, like they're almost like an overly honest crowd. Like, yeah, these guys deserve to get booed. This gimmick's terrible.
Mm-hmm. True. Baltimore was also big in this era. Yeah, that's why you'd have the Great American Bash there. But yeah,
that's hometown, Baltimore, Maryland.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes. Yeah, and you could tell when things were going bad for WCW because, Baltimore and Philadelphia would be down. If they weren't drawing there, then they knew things were bad. All right, let's see, Rick Steiner taking the beating.
What did you think of the tag team division at this point? Because, you mentioned the Iron Man tag team match at Starrcade where they have all those teams in there. Their tag team division is kind of stacked here. Freebirds, obviously the dudes aren't great, but Steiners, Doom, Road Warriors, the Samoans, the Skyscrapers, the Midnight Express, Rock and Roll Express are kind of going to be kind of still there.
They'll be back, Rock and Roll Express will be back in a few months, yeah.
What do you think about that tag division? Pretty damn stacked.
It is. They valued tag team wrestling. Mid-Atlantic always had, and this kept going into WCW. And it was a major part of the show. It's why you could take it's something that you got out of NWA WCW that you weren't necessarily going to get for WWF. In WWF, if you had a really good series of tag team matches, it was a rarity. And Vince McMahon didn't like tag teams, and he just thought, he just thought it means I have to pay four guys for a match instead of two.
Yeah, this weird because they definitely had some great tag teams, but it felt like WCW would put their tag teams in the main event and things like that.
Yeah.
Vince would never do it unless it's like Hogan and Savage together, but that's not really a tag team. That's just two huge single stars in a tag team match.
Well, even in 2020, the New Day, great tag team, the Usos, great tag team. They'll put together these great tag teams, but they won't take the tag team division seriously.
Yeah, that is one thing. You're right. Never really does he put tag wrestling in the main event. What did you think about Meltzer saying that AEW has the greatest tag team division of all time? I just thought, just thinking about that was kind of a funny comment.
All time is kind of pushing it because, you look back in the 90s in Japan. Look at All Japan in the 90s. There's your Frankensteiner.
The crowd's going nuts.
Fans are celebrating like they just saw a home run or goal or hockey fight or whatever. And Rick Steiner with a power slam. All right. Oh, there she is. This isn't going to end well. There's Rick Steiner, and there she is. Hey. Oh, and Rick Steiner's upset. Nope. All right. He's got his hands up. Nope, they got distracted. Oh, wait a minute. Loading the mask.
No,
Bob Caudle caught it.
Don't do it.
Oh, no. His forehead is protruding. Thank you, Jim Ross. Oh, no.
So why exactly does that work for the guy in the mask? Is it because it's his idea?
He's delivering the headbutt with the metal plate or whatever in there. I mean, it should hurt him a little bit, but yeah, he's delivering the impact.
Okay.
Not taking the impact.
I'm thinking about it. the way I did back then, I was shocked that the Steiner brothers lost to a quote unquote rookie tag team.
Right.
Just absolutely shocked by this. I mean, they really put over Doom, obviously Doom cheats, but they, I mean, they put over Doom as like a formidable force, and they lose on their debut outing. It's pretty crazy. The Steiners lose.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, if they beat Doom in their debut outing, Doom doesn't mean anything.
Yep. True.
If you get, they were going to keep Doom around for a while. So Doom had to win. And yeah, the feud continued. They would be part of the deal at Starrcade. Oh, here he is. This week's feature is the U.S. title match, and there he is, the U.S. champion Lex Luger.
My
He looks like $1 million.
Oh yes, he does.
And O'Ken agrees, right?
Oh yeah, Every now and then when I'm doing these with Pat, I'll forget just how good Lex Luger looked back then. So that actually kind of took me by surprise.
Yes. And Lex always, you know, staying on brand by making that L with his thumb and forefinger.
And he's holding there, in terms of design, that's one of my all-time favorite championship belts.
Fantastic belt.
Yeah, that U.S. title, that version of it is awesome. Yeah. I wish they would have kept it around longer.
Okay. All right, so yeah, Pillman is just, Pillman's getting his start. This is, officially, Pillman hasn't lost on TV yet. And, but they've decided that Pillman is, they've decided that Pillman is something, and they're going to do something with him. They just haven't figured out what.
And Gordon Solie does not seem happy with Lex Luger right there.
Well, no, Lex Luger turned heel back in, I want to say, May or June of 89. So we're in October, and yeah, Luger's being a jerk. They needed somebody to be a heel because once they turned Flair babyface, they were short on heels. So Luger had to turn back.
What did you think about him kind of going face and heel? Do you think it was too much with him? Did he think it killed his momentum?
I think it kind of did. Of course, the way they pushed him and as big as he was, that helped Luger out. And I think Lex always preferred being a heel. There he is. Okay, the song is Rocket by Def Leppard, by the way.
Nice. This is a great entrance.
If you didn't notice, yeah, Brian Pillman, former Cincinnati Bengal, big football star at Miami of Ohio. I'm sorry. I know Jim Ross is supposed to tell you all this, but yeah, but you got a handsome guy who played pro football. You know,
great athlete.
They saw tremendous potential and an accomplished wrestler from Canada. You know, who worked for Stampede. Yeah, they saw big things for him. He's a little bit smaller though than the usual WCW stars.
Brian Pillman nowadays, like if you could transport him in time, he would be an absolute megastar right now.
If you could transport this version of Brian Pillman, yes, before the injury. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Yep. That's exactly what I'm saying. Yep.
That's right. Okay, and there he is, Luger. And I mean, Luger's the number two guy. This is the number two match on the show. Yeah. And Luger held the U.S. title for a long time. He'd won it in February, so we're already on like 8 months with the title in this run. More football talk from Lex about Lex and how he was a college football star and a big played in the USFL. They don't call it the USFL, but yeah. Oh goodness.
Had a 3.78 GPA.
That's right. Oh, 4% body fat. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Played in the Canadian Football League and was a starter in the Canadian Football League at 19 years old. Wow. Okay. Right. Yes. And Lex Luger is one of the guys who will rule the sport in the 90s. Well, he did okay.
Kind of.
Yeah, if you had told people in 1989 that Hulk Hogan would have a bigger decade in the 90s than Lex Luger, I don't know that they would have believed you.
Okay. Did Hulk Hogan have his own bus? I don't think he did.
No, he didn't. No, probably because he hadn't thought of it.
Okay. Lex Express. That was a big deal.
That was, yeah. Yeah, and Cornette, I remember, you know, they didn't let him beat Yokozuna, and I remember Cornette's giving a torch talk, and they said, well, they got to let, well, Luger's got to win here because he'll look like a plate of warm piss if he doesn't beat Yokozuna. And, you know, that was
I never understood why he didn't win. It didn't even make sense. I mean, the countout
they
was
wanted,
such
they
a lame
wanted to
win.
They wanted to hold it till WrestleMania.
Wow.
They were putting it off till WrestleMania, and didn't work. All right.
If you're going to go with Luger, you got to go with him. He's got to win the title. And then he was so excited that he won by Canada. That was
dumb.
Yeah, it was really dumb.
Yeah, babyface's acting dumb never gets over. All right, so here we there's a feeling out process.
Man, he is huge.
He's I mean, Pillman's not a small guy here. He's dwarfing Pillman.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
And this is a heck of a match, by the way. I'm just letting you know now. Up.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, rewatching it too, and I wanted to just double check the star rating because I was like, pretty. I mean, he gave it 3 1/4, but I probably may even go a little higher. But I thought it was a great match.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I mean, people were expecting this to be a really good match. Yeah. Okay.
I feel like Luger in general in '89, I feel like he was on fire that year.
Oh yeah,
his feud with Steamboat was awesome. I mean, he did really, really good stuff in '89.
Yeah, I wish they had, you know, I wish Steamboat had been able to stick around. They could have kept that going, but
what was that issue? What was the deal? Was it money or what?
It was money. He was being moved down the card, and you know, friends of him were starting up what would become South Atlantic Pro Wrestling. So he had some place to run. But I mean, but you have Steamboat in, and he stays for less than a year. That's, you know, that's not a good look.
And he had arguably the greatest feud of all time in that period of time against Flair, with some of the greatest matches ever. And if anybody, I'm sure you've seen it, Pat, the house show match from March of '89, which is just unbelievable too. So I mean, they weren't only having good TV matches; they were having good matches everywhere. If I think it's on YouTube, actually, the handheld version of that match.
It is great stuff. I mean, pretty much everything, you know, Steamboat and Flair did was great. And there's people like Bruce Mitchell who swear they had better matches in the early '80s than they were having in '89.
That's hard to believe, but I'm not doubting him. But I'm just saying it's hard to believe because '89, those are some of the best matches to this day that I've ever seen.
Right. But I mean, that is when they sort of developed this. You know, they developed their relationship and they developed, you know, and they worked with each other all the time. Oh, there we go. Yeah, people are behind Brian Pillman. Because part of it is they, you know, they hate Luger, but.
Yeah, he's not like a cheesy baby face like the Dynamic Dudes. He's like an actual athlete and like, oh, this, you know, this guy's got something.
Right. Yeah, he does.
He's got fire. Yep.
So the way it ends is, you know, early 1990s, they pair Pillman and Tom Zink together. And have them win the U.S. title tournament, which it went over surprisingly well. You know, if they could have kept Pillman and Zink together, they might have had another, you know, they might have had another really good tag team on their hands. It just I think they lost confidence in Tom Zink there.
Definitely. And I feel like Pillman and Zink had an awesome match against the Midnight Express. I forget which show, but
Capital Combat,
Capital Combat 90. Yep.
In the archives, patreon.com/waybackplayback. Nice. But yeah, that's a full Capital Combat 90 was a fun show.
Yep.
Actually, a lot of these shows from the era were fun, and if they were happening today, people would complain about some of the finishes, and not following up on storylines. But the main stuff was always good.
I agree. I kind of think that some people that look down on this era need to go back and watch it again because I think it's actually, there's a lot of bright spots, a lot of good stuff.
And I mean, if you're complaining about the TV now, you'd get like the 2-hour episode of WCW where there'd be 8 squash matches and nothing but squash matches.
Yep.
I'm of the opinion that there should probably be, you know, at least like 2 or 3 squash matches on every 2-hour show just so guys can get, just so guys, even the undercard guys, can get over and get their finishes over.
I agree. And it's funny, this week, this past week at AEW, when Omega squashed Sonny Kiss, that was the best reaction I've seen from him, from everyone, like saying like, oh, this is the best he's ever looked. It was a two minute match,
well,
if that.
First of all, it's not the best. First of all, if you've seen him in New Japan or in ROH, that's not the best he's ever looked. But he looks
strong,
but the only reason it happened was because Joey Janela, they held him off the show due to COVID concerns.
Yeah, I think the fans probably need to go to Omega Okada, Omega Naito, watch the New Japan stuff before they get too crazy with that. But it was definitely accomplishing, if they're trying to make him the cleaner again, I think it's definitely accomplishing that.
Yeah, for those of you who don't watch a lot of Japanese wrestling, if you're watching those shows, there's those Tokyo Dome shows, for example, bring snacks. I mean, bring some drinks, be prepared to pause it and go to the bathroom. I mean, it's intense, and it's intense stuff, and it's good stuff, but there are some long matches in there.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if Okada Omega had a match under 35 minutes. I don't think they did.
That's not what they're doing now.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. I mean, but here's Brian Pillman. He's getting an advantage. He's going toe to toe with Lex Luger, even though he's smaller, but he's quicker.
There is some great action in this match.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean,
and the crowd's into it.
Yeah.
I mean, yep.
If only Nick Jackson were in this, Dave Meltzer would give it.
Oh, come on. Poor Dave. Jeez.
Sorry.
Oh, well, the Young Bucks are different. The Young Bucks are a different style.
I have nothing but respect for Meltzer as, a journalist and everything. I just, in terms of what he likes in a match, I haven't been on board with him now. And
look, Dave Meltzer was on board and sort of, in the background and being called about pretty much everything having to do with the start of AEW. Yeah. And plus, you cover WWE and only WWE, once they dominate the industry, you're going to want to see any challenger succeed. So, you're talking about, friends, so people who Dave has talked with professionally all get together and they start a promotion. Yeah, he's going to be a little bit biased. I understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not going to, I'm not going to blast him for that, but know the difference between reporting and opinion. And when he's reviewing matches, it's opinion.
Yep, that's why I say his reporting, his journalism. Yeah. I there's nobody I'd trust more.
Luger's keeping up with Pillman a little bit here. When they go to the fast paced action. Luger's actually keeping up pretty good.
Luger's in tremendous shape here. He got in the late 90s. He's bulky. I like how the cheerleaders are firing up the crowd there. outstanding use of the extras.
I wonder if they were like Eagles cheerleaders or something. I wonder who they were. Did they mention who they
Eagles,
actually are?
There's like, maybe not Eagles, but there's like eight colleges around Philadelphia. They could have used any one of them. So, yeah.
Yeah, true. I don't recognize those colors, but I'm sure it's some sort of Philadelphia college.
Yeah.
The blue and the yellow, I guess that is.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I can imagine you're watching the NWA in 89. You think the future of the business looks great. I mean, you're seeing some of these young guys. Dusty Rhodes is cleared out finally. You get Steamboat and Funk back, but the older guys. But you see the younger guys coming up, and you're like, "Wow, this place is gonna catch fire in a year or two." And didn't quite happen the way they expected.
Yeah, and it's crazy because you got Sting, Luger, Pillman, Zinc to a certain extent, the Steiner brothers. I mean, such a great array of young talent. It's funny, it didn't click for some reason. Didn't work out. Ron Simmons too. I mean, it just didn't click for them. Money-wise.
Well, be a bad management and questionable booking.
Yep. Sid, too. Throw in Sid.
Yeah, I mean, Sid, well, you know, Sid and Dan Spivey, the Skyscrapers, they were another act that were, you know, I mean, they're at the Great American Bash. Oh, there we go. There's Hat Guy.
There he is.
Yay. Yeah, the Skyscrapers were you know, they were heels dominating at the Great American Bash, and the crowd was cheering. Well, and the crowd was cheering them wildly in Baltimore. Of course, it probably helped that they were against the Dynamic Dudes. There seems to be a commonality there. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. What do you think about Tommy Young as the referee? I think he's one of the best ever.
Yeah, this is near the end of Tommy's run. Yeah, you definitely were, you know. Yeah, definitely they lost something without Tommy Young. That's one more ref who could do a lot of stuff. Now, I mean, his act with Flair probably got a little bit over the top at times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with the pushing. Yep.
Yeah. And there we go. We lost. Okay. So I'm going. Yeah, you keep talking. I'm going. Yeah, we lost this here.
Even though Tommy Young could be a little over the top at the time, at times, when I first started watching the NWA, he was actually one of the things that really got me into it and got me enjoying the product, because he treated it like so sport serious. Like when he would slap the mat, the way he would check the shoulders of the guys, like everything he did, he really made it look like it was a legitimate contest, and I loved that as opposed to the WWF way of doing things.
I mean, making the refs look incompetent every week does not help anybody.
No, it does not. It just chips away at the foundation of what you're trying to do.
Okay, give me a time check.
1:46:12.
Oh wow, I'm ahead. So sorry about that. Okay, I'll get caught up here.
Luger is doing some great heel work to the crowd.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's really riling them up.
I mean, yeah, Lex is pretty much ready at this point, and it's hard to believe that it would be 91 before they pull the trigger on Lex as champion, and one of the main reasons they do it is because they've lost Flair.
Now, did Flair just want a job to Sting and not lose to Luger? What's like the real story behind Luger not being the champion earlier on?
At this point, you know, they're already planning that, you know, we're going to do Starrcade the way it is. And then Flair turns heel and we're going to do Sting and Flair at WrestleWar, and Sting's going to get the title. And, you know, when Sting got injured, WCW, Jim Herd wanted to have Luger win the title. And Flair's like, no, I promised it to Sting. Sting's going to win the title when he comes back. And they tried to get Luger and when they asked Luger about it, Luger's a friend of Sting's, number one. And secondly, Luger didn't care about holding the title. He's like, no, I'm really not going to push on this. So he sort of sided with Sting and Flair. And, you know, Jim Herd ordered Luger to beat Flair, and Flair's like, fine, I will, you know, you guys owe me money. I will go ahead and drop the title Luger if you let me out of my contract. And they were not going to do that right then. I was going in, you know, with no knowledge, I was going into Capital Combat expecting, okay, Luger's going to beat Flair in the cage and win the title, and of course he didn't, because they were holding it for Sting.
Of course, Sting then wins at that Great American Bash when he's back and healthy, and that's a great match as
yes,
well.
Yes, it is. And after all that fuss, Sting holds the title for 6 months, and part of the, and they're like, and you know, the complaint is that he didn't draw, but you know, Sting didn't get. It's not like Sting had 3 months worth of rematches with Ric Flair. They threw him right into the Black Scorpion angle. And that, you know, and that wasn't the draw that WCW was hoping for.
Yeah, I can't blame Sting for that. I mean, that was pretty bad. And I guess, you know, they're almost teasing like it's going to be Ultimate Warrior. Then it's going to be Al Perez. And then it ends up being Flair. Just Ole with the over-the-top fake voice, they're just the magician. It was not good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they didn't have a real plan, and Ole's backup plan was, well, we'll make it the Angel of Death, who, you know, who was not
we him too.
Who was a big guy, yes, but he wasn't linked with Sting in the past, and he wasn't if I remember correctly, his knees were shot, and he didn't really he wasn't really prepared for a big role, so you go back to Ric Flair. There we go. Oh, there we go.
You got to love Luger's intensity in this match, too. Oh, he's he's clicking.
Luger, he's worked with Flair, he's worked with Steamboat, he's worked with Barry Windham. He's had a clinic in how to work big matches. And, if you've seen, he's been in there with Flair, and Flair's calling the matches a heel. He's learned a lot.
Yeah, I believe Steamboat said that Luger was doing a great job all kind of when they were feuding over the summer. Luger was calling all the matches.
Yep. Oh, here we go.
Wow, that was great. Oh. Damn. Thought he had him.
Okay, I'm then a couple seconds behind you. Okay, that's fine. Wow.
150.28.
Got it. Okay, I'm not that far behind you. Okay. Power Pillman. This is backdrop night. I'm just going to call it. All right, Eric Pillman.
Yes, here we go.
Yeah. Before Rey Mysterio, this is this was state of the art. Oh, should have had him. Should have had him.
Ring positioning right there, yeah. Lex Luger.
Perfect. Smart. This is Luger's becoming a ring general here. And I mean, the fans are into this. Oh. Okay, I don't know how that was meant to go. But Jim Ross made the correct call here, saying that Pillman missed the dropkick, and he did.
Yep.
If you're the announcer, just call what you see and don't try to get too cute. And there it is, the stun gun.
Oh shit. Great finish. Another good finish.
Oh, my goodness. Luger wins clean. Tremendous match. But, tremendous match, and it gets Pillman over as, he's almost at that main level.
Yeah, it's like getting a guy over, but the guy loses. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he still got over because it was a great, great match. And he almost had him. If Luger wasn't positioned so close to the ropes, he almost had him with Eric Pillman.
It's almost like if you're consistent with the way you push people, then storylines start to get across. I don't know. Craziness, I know.
Yeah, that's crazy talk, Pat.
No.
Pat, you're crazy.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so let's hear from the Road Warriors, and then let's wrap this up here for the week. Yep. All right. There we go. Road Warriors in one of their better outfits. Cruz is calling them the best. They're considered the best tag team in the history of wrestling.
Yep. What do you think about that backdrop? Such an interesting
backdrop.
That's
a spooky Halloween backdrop. Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Kind of wish they'd get the shadows off of Paula Hillerene's face, but
yeah. Yep.
Paul. Yeah. You would think that Paul at least would have moved into the light.
Yeah. Paul Ellering, I've said this before, probably the best conditioned guy on the roster, and that's not even a joke.
Right. Back then, yeah.
Yeah, he was.
Go back and look at him on YouTube in the AWA. He's doing like bodybuilding contests against Jesse Ventura. Yeah. That sort of, and arm wrestling matches and stuff.
Yep. Yeah, he could actually lift just as much as those two guys, which is insane
to
say.
We're going
to
stop it here for the week here. I've got it 1 hour, 53 minutes, and 40 seconds.
Bored of wrestling podcasts, but still want a little bit of wrestling talk? Well, It's Usually Hello is the show for you. We've got music debates, we've got comedy bits, we have some wrestling talk, we've got watch-alongs, we've got actual celebrity guests. Check out It's Usually Hello, the podcast, on YouTube and on iTunes. And all your best podcasting listening devices. It is, without a doubt, the funniest show in the history of podcasting, allegedly. And that's not just my opinion, that's also the feared opinions of the fantasy people that I see 24/7. Don't forget to leave the 5-star review, because there's only so many fake accounts one person can make.
We would like to thank Gregoire Lourmet for the use of his track Run Faster, Jump Higher. You can hear all of his work at Jamendo.com or on his website, musicepique.com, musicuee-epique.com. And boy, that sets up big doings for next week's finale of Halloween Havoc 89, because we're going to kick that off. We're going to have the main event, and we're going to kick it off with a match that people really were waiting for and anticipating: the Road Warriors against the Skyscrapers, Danny Spivey and Sid Udy. And of course, guys, if you'd like to know more about Rick Steiner, Scott Steiner, Ron Simmons, Butch Reed, or Brian Pillman, you can go visit pwtorch.com, f4wonline.com, or the Wrestling Observer, or you can head down to your local library app, because it's all in ebooks. Ken, read the line.
So if you want to see what happens next on this big show, you know what you got to do. You got to join us next week. Same way back time, same playback channel.
Yeah, don't forget to visit us on Twitter. I'm at Real Pat McNeil. Jim Valley is at Jim Valley. Ken doesn't use Twitter. And John Paz?
At Two Man Power Trip.
Yes, I believe I've heard of that, Two Man Power Trip. John, I'm going to lose track of all the shows you do. I wish I had all these podcasts when I was younger and able to do it. Can you run them down? I know Taskmaster Talks is the big one because it's on this network, but you can run down all the other ones.
Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan on the Creative Control Network, probably the most popular one as well. Got the Two-Man Power Trip of wrestling. We do interviews twice a week, random guys, legends, current stars, future stars, whatever you want to say. We do literally interviews with everybody. Sting, we had on Bruno Sammartino. We did Dusty Rhodes' last ever interview. So we did a lot of great guys for sure. Also got Shane Douglas's Triple Threat podcast. Yep. Got University of Dutch with Dutch Mantel.
Love Dutch.
Dutch is the man. Pro Wrestling 101 with Justin Credible. Mm-hmm. Do a show called Trump Mania with the author Lavi Margolin.
Yeah.
Talking Tough with Rick Bassman. And then Taking You to School with Dr. Tom Pritchard.
Mm. That's a tremendous lineup for anyone. Go ahead and check out John and all of his shows. And indeed, and for all the Creative Control shows, go to the CC Network 1, I believe is the Twitter handle for that. Ken is at kenandtech.com. Oh, and by the way, this is Wayback Playback. Leave a 5, 6, or 7-star review for us over on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast. And we can't wait to have Jim Valley back. We expect to have another guest host in next week. Thank you very much, John and Ken, for being with us. Until then, yesterday is history, tomorrow's a mystery, and next week is another episode. Good night, everybody.